Hey folks, you guys know I'm always diving into the dark corners of history, unearthing the stories that are sure to chill. Mastering the art of storytelling and research isn't just a passion, it's a craft. That's why I turn to Masterclass. Whether I'm analyzing historical documents or piecing together ghostly tales, Masterclass has been an invaluable resource in honing my skills. Masterclass lets you learn from over 200 of the world's best minds right at your fingertips. And the best part is it's all available for just $10 a month with an annual membership. I've been particularly captivated by the class on investigative journalism taught by Pulitzer Prize winner Bob Woodward. His insights into uncovering the truth may have transformed the way I approach each episode here. What's incredible is that 88% of members feel that Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives. And trust me, I'm one of them. The depth of knowledge and practical tips I've gained have boosted my confidence and enriched the content that I bring to you every week. As a listener of Haunted American History, you get an exclusive 15% off an annual membership. Just visit masterclass.com/haunted. That's masterclass.com/haunted to save 15% on limitless learning. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you going to lose? Don't wait. Join me and start transforming your passions into expertise by visiting masterclass.com/haunted. I'll see you there. Tucked in the heart of New England lies a state renowned for its tranquil beauty and its charming character. Vermont, with its idyllic landscapes, also holds tales that dive into the unknown. Among these tales, three stood out to me, and they cast long shadows over the Green Mountains and beyond. First, we're going to journey into the legend of the Pig Man, a being rumored to emerge on Halloween night from the shadows, a grotesque combination of man and swine, terrorizing the town of Northfield with its spine-chilling screeches. Next, we venture into the halls of Ellis Hall, where echoes of the past linger and the spirits are said to roam free, trapped in an endless cycle of their final moments. And then finally, we explore the mysterious expanse of the Bennington Triangle, a place where reality seems to thin and swallows hikers, hunters, and even entire towns without explanation. These stories are deeply intertwined with Vermont's rich history and invite us to ponder the blurred line between fact and fiction. They entice us to embrace the shadows, listen closely to the whispers from the past, and remember that every legend holds just a smidge of truth. Do you believe in ghosts? Join me on a journey through America's dark and haunted past as we explore the ghost stories and folklore that have been passed down for generations. What scares you? Let's find out. I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History. The quaint town of Northfield, nestled in the heart of Vermont, is a place steeped in whispers and shadows. While it may appear unsuspecting and rural, it is certainly not void of the eerie tales that have haunted New England for centuries. Legends of monsters and high strangeness have found their way into the fabric of this quiet community. There's been a myriad of cryptid sightings, ghostly apparitions, and other paranormal phenomena that has been reported. Within the borders of Vermont, where nature thrives and secrets whisper on the wind, the residents there are no strangers to the weird, which was very surprising to me because when you think, or at least me, when I think of strange places, Vermont isn't on the top of my list. But Vermonters will long disagree with that. They have long been immersed in a world where reality and myth intertwine. Yet among this tapestry of lore, there's one legend that stands out in Northfield, and that's the legend of the Pigman. In this idyllic town, nestled among dark woods and towering mountains, locals speak quietly of a foul man-beast that stalks them. What is this creature that inspires both fear and fascination? Well, in Northfield, they know him only by one name. The Pigman. Whispers of this mutant creature have echoed through generations, passed down from one storyteller to another. It's said that the Pigman's delight is scaring local children, his presence causing many sleepless nights. But there is something far more sinister lurking beneath the surface. The Pigman is believed to be responsible for a series of mysterious disappearances and brutal slayings of local livestock over the years. The villagers live in constant fear, never knowing when the darkness will descend upon their peaceful community. The tale of the Pigman begins on a fateful night back in 1951. It was October 30th, of course, and it was during Northfield's traditional picket night, a night when mischief danced in the hearts of the town's children. See, growing up, the night before Halloween for me was always mischief night. Then I remember when I got married, my wife didn't know what mischief night was, and I thought it was more of a, like, oh, that must be just like a New York thing. I guess it's a Vermont thing as well, and they call it picket night. Interesting. If you had mischief night or something like that the night before Halloween, let me know, please, so I'm not crazy. On this particular night, mischief night or picket night, there was a young man named Sam Harris, who was then just about 17 years old. He ventured out armed with eggs and a spirit that often accompanies youth. They used to not let us buy eggs in the stores around my neighborhood, like the week before Halloween. I remember one, I'm getting sidetracked, I know, but I remember one, it was a couple days before Halloween. And my mother was like, hey, Chris, you gotta run to the store and get me eggs. And like, I legitimately needed eggs, not to throw at anybody, but the guy in the deli wouldn't sell them to me. I mean, he was probably right not to, but I just wanted some eggs, man. That's it. As that night wore on, Sam never returned home. His absence sent ripples of concern through the community. And his parents, as you would imagine, were frantic with worry. They reached out to local authorities and a search party was assembled, covering hundreds of square miles, but no trace of Sam was ever found. Now, there were whispers of people who knew Sam, and it painted a disturbing picture. He was said to possess a dark inclination towards cruelty, particularly towards animals, and pigs were his most chosen victim, and he reveled in their suffering, even going so far as to dine upon their entrails. Whoa, this went dark. There were rumors that he would carve out pig skulls and fashion them into grotesque masks. All right, maybe Sam disappearing might not have been the worst thing. There are some that believe that on that night in 1951, Sam became possessed by forces beyond comprehension, and it transformed him into a pig-like monster that would later terrorized Northfield. Some argue that the Pigman is an entity entirely separate from Sam, and that is the creature that is responsible for Sam's disappearance all those years ago. That's the one I would lean on. I mean, if there was a kid going around torturing pigs, essentially, and wearing their skulls as masks and eating their entrails, Jesus, boy, oh boy, that boy was sick. I mean, a pig-like entity would come and enact its revenge. That's just my, if I was telling that story, that's what would happen to me. I wouldn't have him turn into a pig. I mean, I guess that's kind of just punishment. Have him turn into the creature he might. It could go both ways. Well, anyway, it wasn't until 20 years later, in 1971, that the first notable sighting of the Pigman occurred. Now, the setting was a bit cliche. It was a high school dance, and I'm sure it was full of raging hormones and awkwardness. But on this night, fear shattered their adolescent revelry. A group of terrified teenagers burst into the gym, their faces etched with terror and tears streaming down their cheeks. They had ran away and sought refuge from something unspeakable, something that they have encountered in the depths of the nearby forest. Their trembling voices recounted an otherworldly creature that emerged from the shadows, a creature that walked on two legs, and whose naked body was covered in patches of white fur. and it bared the unmistakable face of a pig. Now the students fled in utter panic, seeking sanctuary within the school's walls. A few brave souls ventured forth to investigate, but found no trace of the creature, only discarded beer cans and silence. It was in that moment that the legend of the Pigman really took root, and Northfield became forever entwined with its haunting presence. Now, word like that spread like wildfire through the town, and with each new account, added fuel to the growing fear. Locals then started sharing their own encounters with the Pigman, confirming sightings near nearby farms where livestock had gone missing under mysterious circumstances. One farmer claimed to have caught a glimpse of the creature rummaging through the trash, while others whispered of its existence lurking in the caves that dotted the landscape. Now, adventurous teenagers would occasionally venture into these caves, hoping to catch a glimpse of the notorious beast. Wow, kids are dumb. And some returned with tales of terror, their faces pale and shaken, and regretting their curiosity. Yeah, no kidding. Now, when I started digging a little bit on the legend of the Pigman, I stumbled on an account on Reddit. The post dated back to 2015, and it recounted a harrowing Pigman encounter experienced by a family member in the 80s. The author described how his sister and her friends, all seniors in high school at the time, decided to conduct a stakeout in the Devil's Washbowl, an area that is known with the presence of the Pigman. Now, eager to experience something extraordinary, they set up camp in the local cave, dividing themselves among different caverns to maximize their coverage. As the night settled upon them like a heavy cloak, screams pierced the air from one of the neighboring caves. The author's sister and her boyfriend rushed to investigate, only to find their friend huddled in the corner, her eyes wide with terror. She sobbed uncontrollably, recounting how her boyfriend had been dragged away by the Pigman moments before they arrived. The creature had shown no fear, smashing a rock against the young man's head before vanishing into the darkness with his limp body. Bloodstained on the abandoned rock confirmed this grisly truth. Now, the girls fled to their cars, racing to inform authorities of the horrifying events that unfolded. Meanwhile, the boys armed themselves with flashlights and makeshift weapons, determined to hunt down the Pigman and find their friend. But the creature eluded them, leaving behind nothing but an impenetrable silence. Even search parties organized by the police, aided by canine units, failed to locate any trace of the kidnapped high schooler. Days turned into weeks and hope dwindled as the torn remnants of his clothes were discovered in a nearby abandoned farmhouse. After that, the trail went cold and the boy was never found. Now, to this day, the Northfield Pigman has evaded capture and defied all attempts at documentation. Some dismiss the legend as mere folklore, concocted to keep children from venturing out into the night or engaging in mischief during Halloween. Others scoff at the notion entirely, dismissing it as an elaborate hoax. Yet for those who have felt the weight of the Pigman's presence in the dark woods of Northfield, Vermont, there is an undeniable sense of unease. So, should you find yourself wandering into the shadowed paths of the Devil's Washbowl, take heed and be cautious. The Pigman may be nothing more than a tale spun from imagination and fear, but in a place like this that merges myth and reality, one could never be too careful. Ellis Hall, affectionately known as a home away from home by its residents, exudes a warm and inviting atmosphere that instantly embraces anyone who steps through its doors. Nestled within its walls are the stories of countless students who have found solace and community within its embrace. With a capacity to house 145 students, Ellis Hall boasts a layout that seemingly blends comfort and functionality. The first floor welcomes individuals with open arms, offering a range of common areas to foster connections and create lasting memories. A vibrant lobby beckons with its lively energy, while a cozy TV room tempts residents with the latest TV shows and movies. A spacious living room serves as a hub of relaxation and socializing, where laughter and heartfelt conversations intermingle. As one ascends the staircase that gracefully winds its way through the building, three floors of rooms unfold before them. Each floor features a long corridor adorned with doors leading to single and double rooms, providing a nice sanctuary for personal reflection and restful nights. You know, the nice things that go on during college. At the heart of each floor lies a communal study space, where the collective pursuit of knowledge intertwines with the forging of friendships that will endure far beyond their college years. The design of Ellis Hall thoughtfully caters to the diverse needs of its residents. Separate designated male and female bathrooms grace each floor, ensuring privacy and convenience. But Ellis Hall goes above and beyond, offering a progressive, gender-inclusive floor that breaks barriers and fosters inclusivity. This unique floor provides a gender-neutral bathroom option, allowing students to choose roommates based on compatibility rather than the traditional gender norms. It is a testament to the hall's commitment to creating an accepting and supportive environment for everyone. Ellis Hall's rich history adds another layer of intrigue to its already captivating allure. Named after George Ellis, a prominent railroad businessman, the hall's foundations were laid in 1951. When it served as an all-female dorm at the Castleton Teachers College. In these days, strict rules govern the lives of the female residents, with signing in and out of the residence hall and limited visitation rights for male acquaintances. In 1971, tragedy struck when Leavenworth Hall, the first residence on campus, succumbed to a devastating fire. Ellis Hall, however, rose from the ashes and stepped into the role of a co-ed residence in 1977. An annex was added to accommodate 16 male students, solidifying its place as a haven for both men and women. However, as Ellis Hall transitioned into a freshman residence in the mid-1990s, it gained a reputation for housing mischievous inhabitants who reveled in pranks and tested the limits of the fire drill system. Over time, this behavior ebbed, and a more harmonious atmosphere enveloped its walls. Yet, there is another facet to Ellis Hall's legacy that adds an air of mystery and intrigue. Whispers of paranormal activity have coursed through its corridors, with some residents reporting encounters with ethereal beings. Among these tales, one name stands out: Penelope. According to local lore, Penelope is said to be the female spirit of a student who met a tragic end within the confines of Ellis Hall. It is believed that she took her own life in one of the upper floor bathrooms, forever tethering her essence to the building. Now, while skeptics dismiss these stories as hearsay, others swear by their authenticity, having experienced the encounters firsthand. The halls often reverberate with phantom footsteps when no living soul walks their path. Strange occurrences manifest in the second floor bathroom, where toilets flush and faucets turn on seemingly on their own. A male student named Higley recounts a chilling experience in that very bathroom, where he distinctly heard high heels clicking against the tiled floor despite finding no one else there. Another female resident shares her encounter with a ghostly apparition standing in her room during the very early morning hours. Now, these encounters only serve to deepen the mystery surrounding Ellis Hall and its spectral inhabitants. Now, you take a large gathering of college-age kids and add in a little bit of ghostly mystery and intrigue, and there's only one next obvious step to take. Someone's going to break out the Ouija board. And curiosity led some brave souls to do just that. Though this is unofficial research, they discovered the presence of not only Penelope, but at least two other male spirits. These male entities introduced themselves as former students from the late 1800s, leaving speculation about which school they attended, Castleton Medical School or Teachers Normal School. The possibility arises that spirits may wander and linger in other buildings on campus, leading to more intrigue that shrouds Castleton University. While concrete evidence remains elusive, the belief in Ellis Hall's haunted nature persists among students in Castleton. Some attribute these claims to overactive imaginations, while others hold steadfast to their personal encounters, convinced that they are indeed communicating with spirits from another realm. The tragic tale of Penelope looms large, as whispers of her presence echo through the halls. It is uncertain whether she chose to reside within her former school residence due to remorse, or for a longing for connecting with the living. In the end, whether Ellis Hall truly harbors restless spirits, or if its stories are merely figments of a collective imagination, that remains uncertain. But there is one thing that is undeniable. The allure and mystique of Ellis Hall continues to captivate all who dare step into its hallowed halls. Hello, my friends. I just have a couple of quick things I want to mention. So, the Zachary Bane Kickstarter it's going great. The amount of support that I've received for this and this project and the emails and the donations, the people who you've donated, I am humbled beyond anything that I can even express. I mean, just thank you all 1,000%. And the campaign's still up. I think I have another 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks running to get to the goal. Listen, even if it doesn't make it, you guys, your support, everything just means the world to me. So thank you all so much. These past 2 weeks, I've been doing live shows on YouTube. And you've probably, if you're listening, you've heard the podcasts. Folklore Firesides, myself and my wife. And we just kind of discuss folklore and go off on tangents. It's getting me more accustomed to that kind of podcast rather than just the pre-record, like pretty much what I've been doing. So yeah, we have a lot of fun. They're live, so we have, you know, live chat going on, and we discuss folklore and our lives and have conversations with, and we're going to start bringing like other people on and guests and things like that. But yeah, we just talk about folklore. It doesn't necessarily have to be in the United States. It's going to be all over the place. But so far, the first two we picked was Jersey Devil and Robert the Doll. So if you are on YouTube and you want to come and hang out, come to the channel, subscribe, say hello, hang out with us, discuss some folklore. It's a lot of fun. We've been having a ball with it. So yeah, and I've gotten some great comments, and apparently my wife is now the new star of the show. I've joked about it in the last episode of Fireside, but like, yeah, I built this and she just swooped on in and took it away. But now it's great. Having a lot of fun with it. So yeah, if you guys want to head on over to YouTube and help me out with those subscriptions over there and come and hang out on the Folklore Fireside. Or if not, and if you don't, and you just want to listen to it on the way you normally listen to my show, it airs, I upload it pretty much instantly right after I'm done. We finish recording, record Friday nights, Eastern time, 10 p.m., 9:30 p.m., something like that. And I have it up by midnight on Saturday. And thank you guys so much for the reviews. I have a call out. I need my Apple people. Guys, Spotify is kicking your coolies. The reviews I have on Spotify completely dwarf the Apple reviews. So if you listen on Apple and you haven't reviewed yet, come on. What are you guys waiting for? That helps me out so much, you wouldn't even believe. It's like the algorithm. It's the more reviews you get, the more written reviews you get, the more people find the show. Helps you grow, helps me grow, and will help me just make more content and bring out more stuff. Ideally, I'd like to do this. You know, I already am doing this episode Monday, and then the Fireside comes out. I record on YouTube Friday, and then releases on Saturday. I'd like to get one more in there. So, yeah. The only way to help me do that is to subscribe and tell somebody, tell a friend. Also, Nightmare Collective. That's coming soon. We just finished up all the paperwork. I think I'm doing the feed transfer over next week, and that's going to get off and running. That's where all my fiction stories are going, with a couple other authors that I'm working with, guys I do Zoning Out with. It's unbelievable. We have so many stories written. I cannot wait. It's going to be weekly fiction anthology coming. The Nightmare Collective. Link to that's in the show notes. All right, I've rambled on long and long enough. Just thank you all so much. I love you guys. Thank you for this. Thank you for allowing me to do this. And let's continue with Vermont. And I'll see you guys. Hopefully I'll see you guys Friday for Folklore Fireside. Later, folks. Hey, folks. You guys know I'm always diving into the dark corners of history, unearthing the stories that are sure to chill. Mastering the art of storytelling and research isn't just a passion. It's a craft. That's why I turned to Masterclass. Whether I'm analyzing historical documents or piecing together ghostly tales, Masterclass has been an invaluable resource in honing my skills. Masterclass lets you learn from over 200 of the world's best minds right at your fingertips. And the best part is it's all available for just $10 a month with an annual membership. I've been particularly captivated by the class on investigative journalism taught by Pulitzer Prize winner Bob Woodward. His insights into uncovering the truth may have transformed the way I approach each episode here. What's incredible is that 88% of members feel that Masterclass has made a positive impact on their lives. And trust me, I'm one of them. The depth of knowledge and practical tips I've gained have boosted my confidence and enriched the content that I bring to you every week. As a listener of Haunted American History, you get an exclusive 15% off an annual membership. Just visit masterclass.com/haunted. That's masterclass.com/haunted to save 15% on limitless learning. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you going to lose? Don't wait. Join me and start transforming your passions into expertise by visiting masterclass.com/haunted. I'll see you there. As the first rays of dawn pierced through the ancient canopy of Vermont's Green Mountains, a hiker's boot pressed into the dew-kissed foliage lining the legendary Long Trail. The crisp mountain air whispered of forgotten tales and unsolved mysteries. For decades, this trail has been a serene haven for adventurers, but it also has been a silent witness to unexplained disappearances that started in 1945, causing an eerie undercurrent beneath its natural allure. A sudden rustling in the undergrowth hinted at the ever-present reality. This is no ordinary trail, and every step could lead one closer to not just nature's heart, but perhaps another dimension altogether. On November 12, 1945, the small town of Bennington, Vermont, was rocked by a sudden disappearance. Mitty Rivers, a seasoned woodsman and hunter at the age of 75, set out on a routine hunting trip with four friends. But as the brisk November air chilled their bones, only four returned from the camp that night. Mitty had gone ahead of them, but never made it back. Despite extensive search efforts involving family, law enforcement, and even the Boy Scouts, no trace of Mitty or his equipment was ever found. It was as if nature itself had claimed him for its own. Some say there's something sinister lurking in those woods, waiting to claim its next victim. And almost a year later, that victim would be college student Paula Weldon. They say Paula Weldon was a bright young student at Bennington College, full of life and curiosity. But on that fateful day in December of 1946, she went for a walk near the trail and never returned. Her roommate, Elizabeth Johnson, was the last person to see her before she vanished without a trace. The town was buzzing with rumors and theories, but no one could uncover the truth about Paula's disappearance. The FBI and state police from Vermont and Connecticut were both involved in her case, attracting national attention within days of her disappearance. And despite their efforts, just like Mitty Rivers before her, there was no evidence or trace of Paula Weldon to be found. She seemed to have vanished into nothingness. And then in December of 1949, another vanishing incident took place. However, this one seems like it could have come straight out of an episode of The Twilight Zone. And I would know. Subscribe to Zoning Out. On December 1st, 1949, James Telford disappeared while traveling near Bennington, Vermont. He was a former soldier who had been taking a bus home from St. Albans with 14 other passengers. According to reports, all the passengers saw Mr. Telford sleeping in his seat. However, when the bus reached its final stop, he was nowhere to be found. His belongings were all still on board, but there were no signs of him inside the bus anywhere. The only thing remaining was a bus schedule sheet resting on his empty seat. And to this day, Telford has never been seen again. On October 12, 1950, 8-year-old Paul Jepson had wandered away from his mother near the Bennington area, where 4 years prior, Paula Weldon had disappeared. The Jepsons were pig farmers, and Paul's mother had instructed him to stay inside their truck while she went to tend to their pigs that they were transporting. It would only take a few minutes, but when she returned, her son was gone without a trace. The community contacted the police and a group was gathered to search for the missing 8-year-old. Bloodhounds were brought in to track the child, but the trail went cold deep in the woods. Sadly, Paul Jepson was never located. From the pages of the Bear Daily Times, October 13, 1950. Bloodhound fails to find missing South Shaftesbury boy. Paul Jepson, 8. Disappears at Bennington Dump where he went with his mother. Little Queenie Keene, a New Hampshire bloodhound, last night failed to find Paul Jepson, 8-year-old son of Mr. and Mrs. Paul Jepson of South Shaftesbury, who has been missing since about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Sheriff Arthur N. Jensen of Keene reported that the boy, in his opinion, was definitely not in the woods or at the town dump where he was last seen. The dog traced the boy by a back road to the junction of the chapel and East Roads, where the trail was evidently obliterated by the heavy rains which occurred about midnight. State police radio cars served as intermediary contacts between Jensen and Sheriff John H. Maloney, who headed the search. Search resumes. The night search was given up about 2:30, but was resumed about 8:30 this morning by volunteer firemen from Bennington and South Shaftesbury and others. Sheriff Maloney and some of his deputies, State Fish and Game Warden Jesse Wanton, made a search by daylight, after which they called local firemen with floodlights and flashlights. The boy went to the dump with his mother in a truck. Mr. and Mrs. Jepson are caretakers of the dump and keep pigs there. While engaged in transferring the pigs from one section to another, the boy slipped away. It was nearly a quarter of an hour before Miss Jepson discovered his absence from the truck where she left him seated inside. She contacted the nearest house and made her own search and then notified her husband, who in turn called the sheriff. Paul was wearing blue overalls and was not dressed for a night in the cold woods. His father waited in the truck for news from the 50 or more searchers. Volunteers from North Bennington, Shaftesbury, and Arlington assisted the local posse. Exactly 2 weeks after the mysterious disappearance of Paul Jepson, another person went missing in October 1950. This time, it was 53-year-old Frieda Langer. Frieda and her husband had gone camping near Long Trail with some family members. While on a hike, she and her cousin Herb Elsner split from the group and came across a stream. Frieda fell in and got completely soaked. She decided to run back to the campsite for a change of clothes, leaving Herb behind. This was around 4:30 p.m. After about an hour, Herb walked to the campsite only to discover that Frieda never made it there. Even though she never emerged from the woods, he searched for her in vain. As the snow fell and covered Glattensbury area where Frieda disappeared, months passed with no sign of her. Then in May 1951, as the snow began to melt, her mummified remains were found. Out of all the missing individuals, she was the only one whose body was ever discovered. Martha Jones has been missing since November 6, 1950. At first, her parents thought that she had eloped with her boyfriend to Virginia, and they didn't report it. However, after contacting the young man and realizing that he had not run away with Martha, they began to worry. A large-scale search was organized in the Glastonbury area over the following days, but like all other disappearances, no trace was ever found. Just 16 years old at the time, Martha Jones seemed to have vanished into thin air along with the others. On December 3, 1950, Frances Christman vanished without a trace while walking to visit her friend a half a mile away. The town was still reeling from the disappearances of Miss Langer on October 28th, and the latest incident only heightened their fears. The news of Frances' disappearance made many speculate that there was a serial killer lurking in the wilds of Vermont. During the five-year stretch of disappearances, only one body was ever discovered. The rest remained missing, vanishing without a trace half a century ago. But what makes these vanishings in Vermont so unique? After all, people go missing every day all over the world. It turns out that the strangeness lies within the specific area of Bennington, Vermont, a place known as the Bennington Triangle. For five consecutive falls and winters, individuals disappeared while hiking near or on Long Trail. Most were alone in the woods when they vanished, with the exception of James Telford, who was traveling by a bus nearby. The most plausible explanation for these disappearances would be a serial killer stalking the trails in the early 1940s. However, it's puzzling that only one body has ever been found, and the others have never been seen since, dead or alive. This leads to thoughts about the bizarre occurrences that exist in our world. Stories of alien abductions and interdimensional portals come to mind. Could those things have actually happened? Especially when considering James Telford's sudden disappearance from a crowded bus? It's hard not to wonder. What if? I'm Christopher Feinstein, and this is Haunted American History. I'd like to give a shout to the newest members of the Patreon, Will and Morgan. Thank you so much for joining. Your support literally means the world to me. If you're so interested in joining the Patreon, got ad-free episodes, early releases, early-ish releases sometimes. All kinds of fun stuff. So thank you so much for your support. Thank you. And I'll see you guys soon. Or you'll hear me soon. Yeah, that's probably better. Later.